it's important that people keep in mind that if we don't do a certain amount of basic research, we may miss out on some really important economic advances in the future.
The Swinet Podcast Show Canada is only possible with the support and trust of innovative companies like
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Mycotoxins were found in over 90% of feed sampled in 2025. Don't let mycotoxins impact your pig's health and performance. Visit dsm-firmenich.com/mycofix. Swine Veterinary Partners is comprised of four clinics across Canada that specialize in swine health, management, research, and development. Top Pigs Norsvin, the world's most innovative swine genetics company.
Welcome, everybody, to the Swinet Canada podcast. I am Dan Columbus, and I'll be your host for today's episode. And with me today, I have Dr. Joseph Cassidy, who is the S.D. Corn Endowed Dean of the College of Agriculture, Food, and Environmental Sciences at South Dakota State University. So welcome to the show.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So as some of our listeners may not be familiar with you, I'll just ask if you can please start by providing us with kind of your background and journey so far.
Sure. Well, I grew up on a family farm in southern Iowa, raising pigs and cattle and corn and soybean and all those things, and then earned a bachelor's degree in animal science from Iowa State University and went on to earn a master's and a PhD at the University of Nebraska, focusing specifically on swine genetics and genomics. My major professor, Dr. Roger Johnson, really focused on increasing litter size in pigs. And so my master's work kind of revolved around the hormonal profiles or endocrinology associated with that. And then my PhD work was about identifying chromosomal regions, so DNA, looking at the DNA and identifying chromosomal regions that were associated with traits affecting litter size in pigs. And so after that, I moved on to a postdoc with the USDA at the USDA Minimal Research Center in Clay Center, Nebraska. Spent about a year and a half there working on swine genetics, all phases, growth, repro, the whole works. And then was fortunate to be hired on at North Carolina State University, where I spent 12 years and started out with an 80% research appointment, again, in food animal genetics and genomics. And there I spent my time pretty evenly between pigs and beef cattle, actually. But and just as I was becoming a full professor, I got recruited to come to South Dakota State University as the department head of animal science, and spent 9 years in that role, and then moved into the dean's role a little over 2 years ago. So it's been a great journey. If you would have told me when I was an undergrad at Iowa State what all was going to happen, I wouldn't have believed you. But it's been a wonderful journey. And along the way, I married my wife, who has a degree in veterinary medicine from Kansas State University, and she's also a faculty member here at South Dakota State. So
attack the issue from both sides, sort of.
Yeah.
No, it's funny when you're talking about how you started your journey looking at increasing litter size. I thought, well, it's interesting because now a lot of our programs are dealing with increased litter size. And how do we raise these pigs? So
yeah, well, we were, there were a lot of people around the world working on that at the time in the 1990s when I was in grad school. And certainly Dr. Johnson was one of the leaders in that regard. And they, we've been quite successful. In fact, one might argue at this point too successful. And so now it's about how do we keep all these pigs alive? So
no, it's definitely some job security for me by doing that. And I'm sure other people as well. Well, we'll get into the topic that we're supposed to be discussing today, which is the challenges and opportunities facing swine production research. And I think maybe before we get into that, in your view, maybe discuss very briefly, what challenges and opportunities you actually see within swine production and why research then would help with those.
Sure. So, the swine industry has always historically faced challenges of some make or description. And at least from my vantage point in the last few years, those challenges have come in a couple of or a handful of different forms. So packing capacity has been one of them. We've had a lot of production in North America, and having enough slaughter capacity to handle all that. And then access to export markets to be able to get rid of the product has been an ongoing challenge. I think we've seen some decline in sow numbers over the last 20 years that reflect the fact that we're getting more pigs per sow, and we've really improved efficiency on the production side. Also, you know, pre-weaning mortality has been a challenge for the swine industry for quite a number of years, and now sow mortality has also jumped up there. And I think the increase in litter size is obviously a major factor in the pre-weaning mortality, and I think it's a contributing factor in the sow mortality as well. So, you know, we had some problems back in the 80s and 90s where we needed to increase number of pigs per sow per year. We were successful in doing that as an industry, and so that's created some other challenges that we're addressing now. And then disease is always in the background. You know, we always we're always dealing with whatever the next challenge is facing the swine industry from a disease standpoint. And then you know, feed prices here in the United States anyway have been a challenge in the last several years. Right now, corn prices are down quite a bit, so that's helping our producers out. But it wasn't that long ago we had $7 a bushel corn, and those you know, those kind of prices on the pig side make for challenges. So South Dakota State has done a number of things in the last, I'll just say, 10 years to address these issues. Number one, we built a brand new swine research and education unit, which opened in 2016, state-of-the-art facility with a multi-point mission. So research is certainly a big part of it. Teaching is also a big part of it. And then we built this facility with an observation hallway down through the middle of it so we can bring the public in without violating or breaking biosecurity. And we have large bay windows that provide them the opportunity to view crate gestation, pen gestation, and farrowing. And it's just really our attempt to demystify the swine industry for biosecurity purposes. Obviously, most commercial units aren't going to welcome the public in. And so we've decided that that's something we're going to take on. We maintain a high level of biosecurity at the unit, but not as high as what you'd have at a commercial facility, so that we can facilitate our teaching and our outreach missions. And I'll get back a little later to some of the research and things going on there, but that facility has really been pivotal. The other thing that South Dakota State University has a long and proud history of is working on the disease side. Back in the 90s, developed the first commercial PCR test for porcine reproductive and respiratory syndrome. And since then, we've worked on a number of other diseases and multiple species, and been a really critical player in terms of fighting on the front lines to keep our livestock species healthy.
Yeah, so a lot of great investments. I haven't been to see the facility. You know, eventually, hopefully, I come down, I can get the opportunity, but it looks great from the pictures. So maybe what are the current challenges with maintaining an impactful research program in swine?
Well, the challenges are, of course, always funding. You gotta have significant research dollars. We've been, I say we, it's really the hard work of our faculty. The faculty have been reasonably successful in recent years. In fact, I would argue quite successful in recent years. So that gets back to you got to have the human capital. One of our top swine nutrition faculty is Dr. Crystal Levesque, who actually hails from Saskatchewan, Canada. And we were able to recruit Dr. Levesque to come down here, approximately 12 years ago. And she's just really, really done an outstanding job for us. And does some really important research on the sow side, looks at sows and different management strategies during gestation, which, you know, may provide critical information that could help with some of these sow mortality challenges that the industry has faced as of late. We also have capacity in that facility to do physiology research, reproductive physiology or nutritional physiology. And we hired Dr. Eric Weaver a couple years ago and basically an applied nutrition role. So he's doing quite a bit of what I would call applied swine nutrition work. In addition to the on-campus, or I say on-campus, it's a half a mile from campus. In addition to the local facility about 15 miles south of Brookings, we build a 1,200-head wean-to-finish facility. And that's an all-in, all-out facility with 48 pens that hold 25 head a pig each, I believe. And we have a pen scale and some of those kinds of things there. We can feed up to six different rations. And so that's primarily just focused on research, but doing it at a scale that is at least more relevant to what we'd see in a commercial production system as compared to our local facility, which is really designed as a research facility. We have a couple of different rooms there with 48 pigs with five head per pen capacity. So we're shooting, you know, for 300 pigs in there and and doing things on a research scale as opposed to a production scale.
Yeah. So, I mean, you mentioned money. It always comes down to money, right? Being able to get the research dollars to do this work. And part of that is getting people on board with what you're doing and doing stuff that's impactful. Are you seeing a shift in what the funders are looking for or their willingness to, say, participate in research?
Well, we've been fortunate in that we continue to get research funded in what I think are the three primary areas. So commodity groups funding that research, and that support not only comes from South Dakota pork producers, but we've been fortunate to get support from pork producer groups in other states in our region. And then USDA grants, we've had success with getting those. And then also funding from private companies and private organizations. So those are really the three main sources. Typically, when you're working with a company, they're going to want that research to be something where the results will have a pretty direct application. But sometimes when we're working with the USDA, we can do things that are, relatively speaking, a little more basic research. Now, that the reason I say relative, if you're a professor in biochemistry, you would argue that everything they do in animal science is applied. They don't do any basic research. So that's all kind of depends on your perspective. But yeah, we have to be responsive to the companies and the stakeholders, the producers. Obviously, if they don't perceive value in the research you're doing, then they're not likely to fund it. That being said, it's important that we remember the value of basic research. And an example I give is there was a professor, not from South Dakota State, from another university, but back in the 1960s, that was doing some basic research on natural hot springs. And he discovered some enzymes that were effective at very high temperatures. And some other scientists took that information in the 70s and 80s, developed what's called a polymerase chain reaction, which is like a copy machine for DNA. And then the scientists in the 80s and 90s really applied that, and that directly led to our sequencing the genomes of the pig and cattle and chicken and all of these. And all these DNA tests for diseases and genetic improvement and all these things we enjoy today are dependent on that basic research that scientist did back in the 1960s at Hot Springs in Yellowstone. And so it's important that people keep in mind that if we don't do a certain amount of basic research, we may miss out on some really important economic advances in the future.
Yeah, it's a message that I tried to get out there before, right? It's like you wouldn't have the NRC requirements if we hadn't done all these little things to try to figure out, right? So it does apply at some point. It just might not be as obvious right away with some of this research. So we talked about some of the challenges and some of the current stuff that's kind of going on. Maybe we can discuss briefly the opportunities in research and maybe even focusing on like kind of an untapped opportunity, like something that you see out there that hasn't really been explored.
Sure. Well, the thing with research that I remind myself and tell others on occasion is that, you know, the easy stuff has all been done. The long-hanging fruit's been picked. And the stuff we're doing these days is hard. In many cases, it's expensive. Not always, but many times. And, you know, if we want to fill the knowledge gaps that exist today, we're going to be doing things that are complicated and difficult. Now, you can argue there are some things that maybe they're not necessarily that hard now that we have the technology that will enable us to do them. In the past, we just didn't even have the tools to get it done. But most of what we do today requires an integrated approach. It requires, you know, faculty from multiple disciplines. We're going to have to put teams after this. You know, ideas still come from individuals. Teams don't usually develop ideas. Individuals develop ideas. But then oftentimes it takes a team to execute the plan. And so the challenges are with finding the human capital again, the people with the ideas, and putting the teams together. The opportunities are we've assembled an effective team here at South Dakota State, and we have tremendous tools. And that gives us the ability to tackle some challenging topics. You know, I don't know that I have any great insight as to what the new and novel topics that we're going to be tying into. But, you know, I've already mentioned before, I think the prenatal survival, the sow death loss situation that I know the industry is struggling with right now, you know, on a more 30,000 foot scale, you know, water use is something that I think agriculture is going to continue to need to think more about. Certainly it's something we've thought about in the past and in some places more than others, but the ability to really know how we're utilizing water in all of our ag systems, whether it's raising corn and soybeans or raising cattle or raising pigs or chickens, I really think that's going to be of ever-increasing importance as we move forward. And we do have some tools that will allow us to monitor that.
Yeah, I liked when you mentioned the human capital in this answer. And you've mentioned it a couple times already, but I think it highlights, you know, the requirement that you need those people with the ideas and the skill sets, the move to team and interdisciplinary. But it made me wonder, you know, so now when you're looking to hire new faculty or look for new people, right, is the focus of like a skill set or what you're looking for, are they changing? Do you still look for the traditional nutritionist, or is that kind of gone on the wayside?
Well, we still need people that have a really good foundation. So if we're talking about nutrition, they need a really good foundation in biochemistry and the basics of nutrition. I mean, they need to understand the science. But people skills, the ability to work with others, the ability to work as part of a team, the ability to know when you need to step up and be the leader of the team, and when maybe your role needs to be more of a support role and be able to shift those gears, that is just increasingly, well, I shouldn't say increasingly, it's always been challenging to find individuals who can play those type of roles. There's not a lot of those individuals out there, and the competition for them is really high. Other universities want them, private industry wants them. And the swine industry, I would argue, is a pretty mature industry at this point. We have several, you know, very large corporate organizations that are intricately involved in the swine industry. They have their own in-house R&D firms. I guess I haven't sat down and counted them up lately, but they're, I know 10 years ago, there were more PhD geneticists in the swine area working for private companies than there were in universities across the world, pretty much. So it's just different than it is in some other species. You know, poultry would be very similar in that it's also a very mature industry. So that human capital, you've got to find people that have the skills, but they also have to have the passion and the desire to be in an academic setting. And that's not a place everyone wants to be. Typically, you know, academia is not always the highest paying option for some of those talented individuals. And, you know, they usually have to have another reason for being here. We try to take really good care of our people, don't get me wrong, but I don't know too many people that are working at a university because that was the highest paid job they could get. Most of them are earning a nice living, but they're there because they have a passion for research. They have a passion for teaching. I do think there's still quite a bit of flexibility in the academic system that people enjoy. Obviously, as we talked about earlier, you need to get grants. So you got to appeal to the folks that are making those decisions. But, you know, if you've got a good idea and something you want to pursue and somebody's willing to fund it, you know, you got a lot of freedom to focus on the things you want to focus on.
Yeah, really good. Well, it seems like you guys are doing pretty well down in SDSU. But I'm wondering, you know, what are your thoughts with why so many land-grant universities in the United States are struggling to maintain a strong swine program?
Well, I think it really goes back to a lot of the things I've already mentioned. You know, it's a very mature industry. Historically, you know, swine production classes were filled with sons and daughters of pork producers. There aren't enough sons and daughters of pork producers to fill those classrooms anymore. And so several universities across the country have, you know, they don't even teach a swine production class anymore. And when it comes time to rebuild your facilities, which takes millions and millions of dollars, you typically got to have some stakeholders that are willing to go to bat for you and support you, either through donations to help with that construction or to help get some legislative support to get some dollars appropriated. We don't have as many swine producers as we used to have. There's a lot of consolidation. Facilities are bigger. And when you don't have as many producers, you don't have as many voices to provide you that support in the capital cities across the states. So I just think it's a combination of a lot of things. There's really a movement in higher education to specialize in certain areas. There are some land-grant universities I know who've pretty much said, we're going to focus on beef cattle. That's the most important industry in our state, and that's where we're going to focus our time. At South Dakota State, we've continued to try to be very diverse. We did pretty much move away from poultry back in the late 80s, when I was an undergrad, actually. We do a little bit of poultry research today, but for the most part, we're beef cattle, pigs, sheep, and dairy. And that actually makes us pretty diverse among other land-grant universities that we're still really got four species. And I should also say equine, not what we're here to talk about today, but South Dakota State maintains a band of about 60 registered quarter horses. So we've worked hard to maintain that diversity, and but it's not easy, and it's not going to be easy going forward. It's going to continue to be a challenge. So, you know, you can make arguments for the universities that have decided to specialize, and maybe that's the way to go. We've thought it's important to maintain the diversity so we can meet our wide stakeholder audience.
Yeah. No, very good. Well, we're coming close to the end of our time, so I'll just ask for a final take-home message for our listeners.
Well, I just really appreciate the opportunity to visit with you. Certainly, if anybody wants to learn more about South Dakota State University, we welcome having them reach out, whether they're interested in a job or they're interested in coming to school here or graduate school, what the case may be. And I do think the swine industry has a very exciting future ahead of it in North America. We've got challenges, but we've always had challenges.
It's time for our famous three.
Excellent. So before I let you go, we do have three more questions for you. We ask all our guests. The first question is, what is your favorite swine? Or you can make this agriculture if you want to go that broad. Your favorite swine or agriculture related resource?
Well, I'm kind of a data nerd, so probably the statistics put out by the USDA regarding farm and livestock production and crop production across the United States.
Yep. I mean, there's no wrong answers. This is all what, you know, you're kind of what your favorite thing is. Maybe this one will be a little bit easier. Is a favorite book or resource outside of pigs?
You know, this is really about leadership, but there's a leadership book out there called The First 90 Days. And for anybody who's assuming a new leadership role, I think that's a book that you... I was told I needed to sit down and read it before I became a department head, and I did, and I've recommended it to many others.
Okay. I'm going to have to look that one up. And then it leads very well into our last question, because when you look at successful leaders in the past or ones that you currently work for that are successful, what is a characteristic that you think they all share?
Flexibility and the ability to get to know the people who work for them as individuals.
Great. Well, again, it's been great having you on. A lot of good information about South Dakota. And like you said, everybody who's interested can, you know, contact you guys and find out about the opportunities. So just thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent from Brazil without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.